As you can see, we're forming as a rather weird boy band sat here on perched on these little chairs, and we're going to do our best to pass the mics around. But I'm here to just wrangle these guys, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves, because believe me, it's a lot easier if they do that. So the panel is the role of hackers in innovating within IoT security. As we're talking, if you do have a question, feel free to put your hand up. I might have to dash out with the mic, though, I think, unless we haven't got another mic, have we? Oh, we have. Good. Right. So, without further ado, I shall let you introduce yourself from this way forward.
Hello, everyone. My name is FC. I am the current head of cyber research for Raytheon UK, the massive defense firm. I also run my own security consultancy.
Hi, everyone. I'm Darren Martin, security researcher at Xyphos. That's about it.
Hi, I'm Adrian Winkles. I'm a OWASP Cambridge chapter leader, and I'm a senior lecturer in information security at Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So, IoT. We hear a lot about IoT security and problems with IoT security. And if you were here at the start, you saw my 451 numbers that half the companies we asked said they had a shortage of security consultants, and the other half said they didn't. And we were talking earlier that it might be that the people that think they don't have a problem don't know quite how bad it is. So I'd like your opinions on how bad is the state of IoT from a security point of view with your various hacking hats on.
I think actually IoT security is a nightmare. There are so many attack surfaces for IoT security that it's not just one size fits all. There are lots of different layers that you can appreciate. And I look at it particularly from the application security point of view. There are so many applications involved, be it the sensor, the hub in the middle, the mobile app, the back end apps in the cloud. And they, application security is not getting a mention in many of these things, and it's just making the whole idea of IoT security worse.
Yeah, I mean, he's exactly right. I'll put it this way. There's not a single IoT product out there that could be called secure that I've seen yet. Every single one of them that I've ever had a chance to look at has had some ridiculously simple security issue. And the problem is that too many of these things are just pushed out to market without even any verification that they're in any way remotely secure. It's just ship it and then fix the problems later. Problem is, some of them you just can't fix.
Yeah, I'm not really sure there's much I can add to that other than, you know, not sugarcoat it. It is pretty bad. It's about as bad as it can get. We seem to be obsessed at the moment of putting, you know, internet connectivity on almost every device we can. And I think it was Dr. Ian Malcolm once said, you know, we're so busy with wondering whether or not we can, we don't stop to whether or not we should. I think we need to stop just interneting everything. We don't need it. It's not going to make our lives better.
That's interesting to hear. So it's a bit like Battlestar Galactica and not connecting so the Cylons can't get you. So given people are going to be connecting everything, because I'm not sure who's going to stop them, or on the opposite of that, is it going to be stopped by a really, really big and serious incident in some sort of industrial context or nuclear context? What do you think? You can go first.
Okay, so do I think there's going to be some massive incident that's going to stop the Internet of Things? No. It's going to be a creeping, slow death. It will come up and it'll be too late. If we don't stop it now, it will be too late to do anything about it. I don't think there's going to be some massive Stuxnet-style massive thing that will suddenly kick everything off or stop everything. I think it's going to be the other way.
Yeah, have to agree with them there. Again, you're not going to see some kind of emergence of one, oh my God, everything's broken. It's already everything's broken. It's just we're going to realize it really, really slowly. It's going to catch up with us at some point. Like we recently saw with Internet of Things-based botnets packeting huge websites off the internet. We suddenly turned around and went, oh, hang on, where'd that come from? Whereas it was a thing that's been going on behind the scenes for years.
think one of the big problems, of course, is that we are commoditizing IoT devices, just putting if you like, a network stack on and thinking, we're just connecting everything up. But often that network stack is insecure. I mean, we saw recently with the Mirai botnet, which was IoT CCTV cameras, hard-coded passwords for Telnet, which is obviously a very old terminal-based protocol, which wasn't designed with security, yet we're using those sort of protocols in devices that are available. It shouldn't be any surprise that we've actually put, that someone's put together simple bits of code that basically pull large botnets for denial of service attacks together.
Thank you. A little bit about motivation for hackers. So there's kind of the Hollywood version of the hacker, and then there's the kind of political countries having a go at one another hacker. Where do you guys see yourself fitting in that from a motivational point of view in dealing with the problems or causing them?
I think one motivation is people like the challenge. I mean, if somebody can break something, and some people can find something to break, to circumvent, or just to cause a bit of kudos. That's one of the reasons why. And of course, these sort of things are there to challenge. I mean, some people have now made a career out of breaking IoT devices. Ken Munro from Pentest Partners, if anyone's ever seen his demos, is a nice career path.
I was just going to say, you say it's a challenge. It's not. It's so easy. Literally, children can do this. That's how bad it is.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I know you do work as well, trying to inspire the next generation to understand both the problems and to protect themselves. But how do you think the education system and companies are trying to bring along this these next set of skills that we need in this? I know these bits are easy at the moment, but it's going to get more difficult, isn't it? I would have thought. Are you seeing companies bothering to invest in training people?
No, really. I mean, we've got maybe 1,000 people here, more than that. You know, you've taken your time to learn all this stuff. By the time teachers understand what's going on and learn it themselves, the kids already know more than they do. We interact a lot with universities and teachers, and they're always behind. They cannot catch up. The gap is growing every day.
I mean, I think to a certain extent that, yeah, there's always going to be a learning curve for teachers, university lecturers. But it's. I mean, part of my day job is to turn people away from the dark side, to get people to challenge those skills into being able to break legitimately devices, so that they can inform companies of the problems that are there, and inform the industry as a whole. So there are a lot of talented people out there whose skills you could tap, but at the moment we're not. I mean, it's all part of the sort of the NCAs, the regional police forces prevent agenda, but really we need more money, more people tapping the skills that we've got in this country so that we can boost the whole sort of cyber industry.
I'm interested to know how much of kind of full being a hacker is social engineering and dealing with people and physical entry into places, because the assumption is it's run a few pings and a trace route on something, or try and packet sniff your way into something, or hack the Wi-Fi password. But is a lot of it actually kind of good old-fashioned breaking and entering?
Okay, so in my previous role, I was head of social engineering and physical assessments, which meant for 20-odd years, I was physically breaking into places such as banks and other government and military sites. So is it easier to go in via that way than it is through a firewall and some ODA that you've written? Yes. I've walked into thousands of buildings with nothing more than a smile and a, hey, I'm here to do this thing. It's infinitely easier to do that than it is to sit and code up some brand new exploit to get in and blah, blah, blah. However, with the IoT coming along, you're basically opening the doors to the cyber criminal as well. So companies are just making it worse for themselves, I think.
Well, social engineering, of course, has been around for as long as we've been able to communicate, because it's the old confidence trick, having the gift of the gab, being able to get yourself into somewhere to bluff or whatever else. So combine that with IoT, other cyber issues, and it's easy. If you don't have to do something on a terminal, on a keyboard, you can get yourself in just by talking on the phone or physically entering a building and shoulder surfing or whatever techniques you use, then it's got to be infinitely easier. But combine the two together, would you rely on an IoT device to give you physical security?
Well, that's pretty much it. I mean, you could talk your way in, or you could have some hideously insecure door access control that has root as the login, and you could just let yourself in from your phone. Person at the desk goes, oh, door open for him, all's good. You know, if you combine the two, then everything's done for.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at all of the largest hacks that have happened recently, they're either down to social engineering or they're down to, default passwords.
Well, there's another kind of element to that now, isn't there, that some of the cybersecurity things are employing kind of AI and machine learning algorithms to look for anomalies in order to protect against things that they don't know what to protect against. But presumably those tools are becoming available to the hackers because it's very easily accessible stuff to get to these AI pieces to look for those anomalies. Is that something you're seeing, or is it still good old-fashioned stuff?
I honestly don't think that any of those fancy machine learning stuff has gotten in the way of anything yet. Because most successful attackers look like normal network use. There's nothing abnormal. There's just them logging into a thing, them transferring some files around. Looks like normal business operations. Doesn't look like obviously evil. And you can't train a machine to look for something that it can't really see. Not in my view, anyway.
I think some of the best hackers, whether it be white hat or black hat, are able to, fine-tune their methods of entry. That they look for those unique little angles. As I said, as previous speaker said, if you can make it look like normal traffic, what's an intelligent system going to be able to do? If you can't spot the anomaly, because the anomaly is not there.
I saw a report saying that in some industrial systems, they worked out some hackers have been in there for at least a year already. So that would retrofitting to look for anomalies. They're already the norm. So that's quite a dangerous situation to be in. But with all the connected systems, the one that everyone's talking about, and I was at CES the other week, is autonomous vehicles. I know the answer to this, but how scared are you of autonomous vehicles and vehicle to infrastructure communication particularly?
I think I like living. I think anyone that is going to design a vehicle where the entertainment Wi-Fi is somehow connected to any of the sort of engine management or other safety features in the vehicle is producing a walking time bomb. And I personally wouldn't want to get in one, or I personally wouldn't want to own one unless I was being paid to break the thing.
Yeah, we have to remember, though, that cars in themselves are inherently dangerous. They're like 2 tons of metal with an explosive liquid in them, being driven by someone who's just about managed to do everything they need to get through a test. And we fill them up from, corner stations that are filled with more liquid explosive. So putting a computer in charge of that is probably slightly better than the average driver I see day to day. So am I scared of them? Not quite, because I don't think they're going to really make much difference. It's just going to make my life easier. I'll be able to commute places and do work or sleep, rather than sort of nodding off at the wheel at 140 mile an hour. You know, it's I think it's safer in their hands than mine. But do I trust them? Not really. But I trust people less.
There is the other aspect of that. What happens if your autonomous self-driving car's computer decides to do a software update or crash at 140 miles an hour? I'm sure we're all familiar with, you know, our laptops tend to crash and die at the worst possible moment. What happens if your car does near a corner?
Yes, that is quite scary, isn't it? As we've been talking a bit. Has anyone got any questions for the guys here? Because, oh, good. Mic's on its way.
Hello. Yeah, my name is Robert Herekop, author of the book Disrupted. It's a novel which describes exactly the things you're talking about. The world goes down. One thing I missed, though, when you basically confirm that we buy products, they've got 2 years of guarantee, and after that there's no firmware update anymore and we're vulnerable. What about the role of the internet service provider? I mean, they are assisting us with email spam filters, for example. Can they also enhance their role, for example, by detecting these kinds of attacks you're referring to?
So first of all, internet service providers barely are able to provide internet services, and that's what they do. If they're going to be able to do anything more than that, I think we're hoping, and you know, we're going to pay through the nose to have that facility. I think we'll probably have more luck with Google doing it, just because they've got so much money they don't know what to do with it. But yeah, ISPs, I don't think they're not going to help. Yeah, you're on your own, basically.
Some ISPs do actually attempt some level of security filtering. I know some in Germany block SMB traffic over the WAN, so Configer can't spread and such like. And some, during some of the recent Mirai-related outages, blocked TR-064 traffic. But it took them days to get that filtering in place, and by then it was too late. By then, millions of people have been accidentally disconnected from the internet, so they're not very good at it, but some of them try.
Yeah, I just think ISPs are, as a previous speaker said, are just going to be reactive. If you don't know what the threats are, how's the ISP going to be able to help you?
Thank you. Any more questions?
You mentioned briefly about manufacturing and hackers getting into those systems. Could you tell us a little bit more about the industrial Internet of Things and how hackers play a role in that, please?
So, industrial systems. So, they've been around before the Internet of Things was around, and that's the trouble. They're incredibly insecure. There's no security on them. You can basically walk up to almost any industrial system and just take it over. I don't know if there's anything they can do about it. It's just going to cost a lot of money in order to, you know, fix the industrial systems. I've seen firsthand how bad it can be. You can affect things on a country level, and it's so prohibitively expensive to fix it that they're just not going to.
That's pretty much exactly it. You've systems designed pre-internet that got interneted, and you've got stuff like, I mean, if you look at advisories for any of the major, you know, SCADA or industrial control system vendors, if you look at any of the security advisories for them, it's like, whoa, this is like kind of like the bugs you found back in the 80s, you know, default credentials, no login needed, or crashes if anything even slightly weird happens, and we're trusting power plants with this stuff.
I mean, certainly some of the work that I've looked at before, industrial control switches, the commercial equivalent of what we're putting in enterprises for data and voice, are light years behind the times. As the previous speakers were advised, the sort of error, the sort of things that are being patched now were being patched 15, 20 years ago. And these are at the heart of many manufacturing and industrial complexes. We're just nowhere near being able to deal with that stuff yet.
That's a rosy picture we're painting. It is bad. Any more questions? Flick it. Nope. It's on his way.
Hi, I'm Stephanie, and I'm working at Pyramid Research. I'm an analyst. The question is, with the pretty pessimistic background just offered and that nothing is secured, who's responsible for securing? So should that be the network providers, the companies that produce the connected devices, the state? Who should be protecting technically the devices? Thanks.
Okay, so in my view, and the other people here may disagree, I think it's on the manufacturer. If you ship a vulnerable device, it's up to you to fix it. It's on nobody else. You should be liable for the product you make. The same with any other products.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that. I think it's solely down to the manufacturers, really. They're the ones that create the software that doesn't have like the ability to change the default password or anything. You know, I don't know how many people here build Internet of Thing devices. How many people here? Put your hands up if you're part of a company that does. Wow, only two. Really? A lot of you are lying. But you have to remember that, you know, with great power of Internet of Things comes great vulnerabilities. Yeah.
Certainly, it's a case of I agree with the previous two speakers about building in security at the manufacturer level. There's also a case for standards, eventually. We're a long way from it, but if you think about how far interoperability for Wi-Fi has gone over the years, that's the sort of golden chalice that you want to be aiming for the Internet of Things, that you have security interoperability, you have a set of standards that everyone signs up to. And if the device, the sensor, isn't badged with that, you don't buy it. And if with those sort of standards, if you don't adhere to them, if your device is broken, then you have more legal liability.
So, Anthony Macy, Barclays. I'm inclined to agree with you, and I think that part of the problem is the push for price. So when they're trying to make devices as cheap as possible on a price-by-price basis, it's very difficult to pay for the security inherent within that as well. And though I agree with you that people should look for a standardized mark, we already see people buying cheap goods that put them at danger today. The difference is with IoT, I don't know if you'd agree, but potentially they're putting everyone else at danger as well by buying those cheap devices and connecting them to the internet.
Yeah, I'd say I agree with that. I think, yes, there's always going to be the cheap knockoff, you know, Chinese market IoT devices, but that comes down to the consumer. If they make that choice, then yes, they have to pay the responsibility of that. If their ISP, for example, picks up that they're connecting stuff that isn't badged with some standard, then they can refuse them, you know, their connectivity. If they see traffic coming from that device, then they just kill it. So I think it's going to be some sort of mishmash of, like, you know, trying to force people to understand that they need to buy the correct stuff, and then enforcing that somehow.
It's about everyone taking a certain level of responsibility, isn't it? It's about anyone that buys devices making sure it adheres to the necessary standards. It's about system integrators making sure that the middleware in between adopts those same standards as well. It's also, of course, if you're talking about IoT devices, we're now talking about sensors that are self-powered, low-cost solar power. Some of these devices are going to be out there for decades. And that to me is part of the scary thing of IoT.
That's certainly interesting, that because most industrial things are built for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, aren't they? And that's what's driving some of the stuff, but then it's quickly becoming product, which is going to cause us all sorts of trouble. Are there any further questions? It's going again.
Sorry, I keep it short. It's me again. So you basically say the responsibility for being able to have a secure product is at the manufacturer. That what you're saying, you basically all agree on this. But the other hand, you say you confirm that a product has a guarantee of 2 years. So I'm just thinking ahead. You basically conclude every IoT product for a consumer has a lifetime for 2 years, and then you have to throw it away. Can you confirm that? From a security point of view.
Ideally, we'd hope the guarantees for products and that the life cycle of the product would be somewhat longer than that. But if the manufacturer stops shipping security patches after 2 years, and the manufacturer is guaranteed this is secure for 2 years, after that you're on your own, maybe yes, maybe the device may need to be replaced. If it's a device that's designed for long term, say like a, for example, internet connected medical implants or cars or something, maybe they must be forced to have longer guarantees, longer support life cycles. That might be down to regulating manufacturers better. That one needs a lot more thought. You know, people are going to argue about that, I think, at some point.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's going to take us some time. We're a very, very young field, and it's going to take a long time before we get the standardization in place that we need. Should things be replaced as soon as they go out of fashion? Well, how many people are still using XP in interesting places? I think 80% of the NHS is running on Windows XP, and that went out of life years ago. So it's not going to happen. There are going to be insecure things out there. We just have to deal with it.
Thank you. Any more out there? Because I was wondering, what's the reality that we hear? It's kind of in the press, and people just generally talk about how easy it is to gain access to the microphones and the cameras on these things. Is Trump spying on us right now?
Say hello and smile.
So, and are you all on the public Wi-Fi, I presume, here? Everyone connected to Wi-Fi? Should they connect to the Wi-Fi?
Yes, because I need a new Porsche.
There was a telecoms event that we were at, and they'd invited some hackers along to try and look at one of the platforms that was designed to build a secure mobile application. And the idea was at the end of the couple of days, the hackers were going to try and hack in. And so they were busy doing the stuff, and I happened to spot the hackers and were talking to them, and I said, what are you planning to do? And they said, we've already done it. So they were already in it. They'd already scanned them as they attached the Wi-Fi before they did any VPN stuff. They'd got into them, and they were right inside the machines. So is there any way to stop these devious people getting to us?
With enough time, nothing is secure.
Endless amounts of time, processing power, memory, and I'm a great believer in that. Where there's a will, there's always a way.
Can I just ask the audience, how many of you have or know of people in your company that are the kind of go-to security professional for this kind of end of things? Is there anybody that's got the people in the company? I should hope so. So Barclays. So I think it's kind of behoving on everyone to go back to their various lines of management and say, this stuff is real, it's not Hollywood stuff, it does happen, and all these things are insecure, and these guys know what's going on with that. And for every one of these guys, there's how many, 4 or 5 that aren't on the right side?
A lot more.
Yeah. I mean, you said you convert people or try and keep them on the light side. Do you often know which ones you've lost?
Yeah, I mean, certainly going to conferences or in capture the flag type competitions, you know which people are sitting between the lines and which people have definitely gone over the line. But there's always going to be more bad guys than there are good guys.
Question at the front there. Okay.
Hey there, my name's Matt. Do you have any interesting examples of exploits or attack vectors to IoT things just getting into standard corporate environments?
Yeah, actually, I've one really good example from a recent thing. Without naming product exactly. You had a certain device that did telephone stuff that would be attached to the public internet and to your corporate estate. And these devices had all sorts of hideously insecure stuff. They were your standard internet trash device. You know, you've got your command execution via the web, you've got your default passwords and stuff. And turns out there's several hundred of these deployed in the UK, and they all allow any attacker who can find them using search engines on the internet, such as Shodan, direct access to internal corporate networks from outside. When we reported the issue to the company who makes them, they said the product was now end of life and no update would be released. There's lots of other examples, but that's one.
Yeah, I was going to share a similar thing, but it is in fact so similar, I'm starting to wonder if it's the same product. But it probably isn't. There are literally thousands and thousands of these things that are just open back doors into your corporate networks.
Well, I guess anyone that's using any form of broadband router, and they use it for corporate access as well, it's going to have all kinds of default passwords, backdoors, especially if they were an earlier Linux distribution based, I won't mention any names, horrendously full of backdoors. Yeah.
Any more questions? Excellent.
There we are, sir. Hello, I'm Nick. I'm an interested party. What's your proposal? Give us 10 words about what you are each going to do next.
You nicked my last question. Find more bugs. Just find more bugs.
Yeah, find more bugs, have fun, make more money out of it than the IoT companies make out of it.
Interoperability security standards.
Excellent. Right, well, are there any more? That was going to be my final question, so I planted that well, didn't I? I'd like to thank the guys for sharing lots of stuff, and I know it's there's a lot going on in the world, and we may have just all got incredibly depressed, but that's what happens every time I talk to them. I think, oh, God. But we need to carry on anyway, and so it's our responsibility to try and be secure ourselves and try and push, particularly with products and with our companies, to say, let's not do that silly thing because somebody's going to kind of eat into it. So I'd like to give them a round of applause. Thank you very much.
Well done, guys. Well done.
I've now got to introduce the next speaker. I